Sega's Bad Boys Podcast presents
Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
What's up, everybody? This is Darewolf PJ Black, and you're listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast.
Hey, it's Matt Michaels. I have Sin City Steve with me, and today we're talking to none other than Mordecai, Kevin Thorne, Kevin Fertig. Hey, Kevin, how you doing, man?
Oh, man, here we are. It's good. Day 942 of this, stay-at-home thing that's going on here. And, you know, I've got to say that I get why people started, buying so much toilet paper. It really tastes good. I'm not going to lie. Everything's great. So,
how has it been to you? Because it, to me, and I think, Steve, you're the same way, it just feels like you're in Groundhog Day, where, like, you should have the same music waking you up for the alarm every single day, because it's over and over the same fucking thing. Are you feeling the same, like...
Oh, 100%. I've been a religious 5 o'clock in the morning, wake up, work out, get my day started by 7, almost for a year and a half now. And lately it's like, I'll wake up at 9, I'll wake up at 10. Because you just don't, it's like, all I'm going to do is like stare at the walls of my house, for the most part. So, I might as well limit that to something, at least catch up on some sleep that I obviously was missing for a little while, I guess.
Do you get a chance to do any working out during this time?
That was the one thing that, like, when I got my house, I specifically built a gym in it. So I've got elliptical, treadmill. I've got dumbbells, 3 pounds all the way up to 110. I've got bench, all kind of stuff. So I get up, do cardio in the morning, down there. And then, my son and I, my son's 12, and we go work out every afternoon, in the downstairs gym, and stuff. So yes, I'm blessed on that notion. I see some guys out there who's like, I just need to buy dumbbells. Buy dumbbells. I'm like, you guys hoarded toilet paper. I hoarded weights.
That's awesome.
Yeah, with your kid being 12 years old, is his whole thing now, like, no school? Is he on a regiment himself, or are you kind of being a little more lenient because of the fact that Sunday?
No, they were on a regiment. So
okay.
Where I live in Indiana, so we're in Hamilton County, Indiana, and the HSC school systems are phenomenal. Big shout out to them. But they already had e-learning kind of in place. They've kind of experimented with snow days and stuff like that. So they kind of saw the writing on the walls, knowing that this was going to be coming, and kind of started telling the teachers to get ready for it. So, actually he's on spring break today, but they did, great spring break, buddy. We're going to go to Florida, but now you can stay home and look at your dad in the walls. last week they had, it was pretty much regimented, studying. So, I mean, he was online, they did all that Zoom stuff. He knows how to work a computer better than I do. Like if I have a tech problem, I go to him most of the time. I mean, it's crazy how smart these kids are these days, with their stuff. I mean, I need to learn how to do something, and he's already, done it and showing me how to do it. It's pretty cool. They were regimented. So last week, they still had, still got their school in, now they're on spring break for the next 2 weeks. And then now with, the new announcement and everything else, I doubt they'll go back to school. I mean, school is done, May 23rd. And, extending to the 30th of April,
I mean, that only allows them 20 more days, and that's if for say we've got this situation, under control. So I don't know. Big bum out parties. He loves lacrosse, loves football, and spring lacrosse is gone.
Damn.
But I tried to explain to him, is at least he's not a senior. Like some of our friends around town, the kids are seniors in high school, and there goes their senior baseball season, their senior lacrosse season. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and you miss any opportunities for scholarships, and you also miss we've all experienced in that senior prom. So it's crazy.
Exactly. I mean, that's the first time you get to see what a girl's dress looks like on the ground. I mean,
Definitely, man. And so let's take it back a little bit. I read that you actually got involved with pro wrestling by working out with Sid Vicious at Gold's Gym. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and I was going to go try to be a walk-on at University of Memphis. And there's a Gold's Gym off there, Poplar Avenue. It's kind of a cool meathead / stripper / good looking people gym and stuff, and that's where I started working out, and then ended up becoming like the morning manager there during kind of the summer. And Sid used to come in with a couple guys, and they'd start missing, or he'd start coming in frustrated. And finally one day, after I kept spotting him, he's like, "We're just going to start working out. What are you going to be doing? What are you managing?" I'm like, "Nothing. Okay, sure. Whatever." And it was just like, you don't interrupt Sid's workout time. That's the one thing that I did learn. It was like, all right, he says you got to be there at workout at 9:00. You better be there at 8:45. Or, at that time, we were doing 2 days, and he was coming at like 5:00 in the morning as soon as I was opening the gym. I mean, standing out there tapping his foot because, of course, I was running, 5 minutes behind.
Oh, man.
And get in there, work out, and then we'd probably I'd act like I was working when the rest of the morning crew got in there for like 2 hours, and we'd go eat lunch and then come back and work out again and stuff. And then that's kind of where I never marked out for him. It was never a thing like that. Like I never talked wrestling. It was only we just worked out and stuff. And then one day it was I gotta go start getting back in shape, because this was the time he was kind of off because of his broken neck. And getting in the ring, and I've got this wrestling match coming up for Mo on Men on a Mission up in Knoxville, or just outside of Knoxville, and stuff. And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's cool." He goes, "Well, you're going with me." I am okay. it was like, I'm not gonna tell your big ass no, I guess. I'm like, I don't have wrestling boots and everything else. Like, next day I just get a Kroger bag full of a brown grocery bag of wrestling boots, black spandex, some Trace knee pads, and a leather vest. And he's like, "You're gonna be Kid Vicious, and just come. You're just gonna be with me." Okay. Whatever. We went and wrestled in Buddy Wayne's backyard a couple times, which was
nice.
Single-handedly made me go, "What in the F am I getting myself into?" Because they roll out. I mean, first off, the ring is dilapidated as crap. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the 2x6s that really look like more like 2x splinters. And then he rolls out this carpety looking mat, and now not to mention there's like 2 dead rats, a dead squirrel in there, something else dead, you know, and stuff. They roll this padding out. And that's supposedly the padding, you know, that, you know, protects you from this ring. And I'm just sitting there going, what am I getting myself into? And then, you know, they rope up or put up the tarp and stuff. Well, you know, they weren't using ropes like WWE. They were using basically radiator hose and wire, and stuff. So every now and then, you come off and you hit the rope, and it would be like you're getting shot or getting a shot to the nurse. Like, you know, like I always had more spring in my step in that ring because you know, as soon as you hit the ropes, you're like, oh, and there it is. You know, it's like, yeah, it's pretty great. You know, and then, you know, off we went to up to Knoxville.
That's awesome.
He's in the main event, and it was Mo from Men on Mission and a kid by the name of Dirt Bike against me and Sid, and I didn't get tagged in the entire time.
Wow.
So, I just basically sat there. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, hey, everybody, look at me. Like, you know, I had no idea what I was doing and stuff, and that's probably why he never tacked me in. You know, I got a $250 payday, and I was like, Jesus Christ, this is the greatest thing I'm ever doing.
Hell yeah.
Which is probably some of his money. He just gave it to me to make it look like it was better than it was. But yeah.
Yeah.
So that was probably the best payday I ever got on the Indies, honestly. So, you know.
And so obviously, you know, speaking about the Indies, you know, you won the Memphis Championship Wrestling Championship, also Tag Team Championship. But then in April of 2002, you signed a developmental deal with WWE. Yeah. So you were in developmental for a couple of years. And then in 2004, you were called up from OVW to WWE, and the Mordecai gimmick was launched. Several people cite this as being a huge missed opportunity for WWE at the time, as they saw the vision of the Mordecai gimmick and that it definitely had legs and potential. What was the original pitch and projection on what the character arc would be to you?
Actually, the pitch was mine.
Oh, nice.
To Vince. You know, WrestleMania just happened in Madison Square Garden. He brought me and Tomko up. Me and Tomko were wrestling all over. We went into, I want to say it was Boston was the next day. We went into, where's the Monday Night Raw after Madison Square Garden? It was somewhere in Massachusetts, I think. Anyway,
would it be?
That's
yeah.
But that's where they brought me with Vince. John Laurinaitis brought me in with Vince and Stephanie. And then, yeah, I had to meet Vince for the first time in the room, looking stone cold through me. And was like, where do you see yourself? I'm like, oh, man, me and Tomko are killing it. We're doing this. We're doing that. Would definitely see us as being a tag team that just can kill everybody. And, you know, and he goes, no, what do you see yourself doing? He goes, I need single stars. I don't need tag. I need single stars. And I went, I'd always done the seven deadly sins gimmick and stuff. And I was like, well, and I wanted it to be called Malachi, not Mordecai. and I wanted it to be kind of almost Sugar in the Cornish / Seven Deadly Sins, you know, kind of thing is how I explained it to him. And literally the next day was Boston. Boston, they had me going with Brooklyn Brawler, do some promos. And basically I just quoted, yay, then they walked me to the Valley of Death. I was for no evil, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just did it kind of in a slow rap, and Vince comes in there, he's like, oh, this is fucking great, you know. And then leaves, and then next thing I know, him and Taker are watching this. So then, you know, I get told I did a really good job, you know, whatever. Now they're coming up with they're coming up with more ideas with it, and then that's where they asked me what I thought. I was like, man, all white. I mean, you know, if we're gonna go against, I want to go against Taker, all white, all mm-hmm. white versus all black. I mean, it only makes sense. And stuff. And then that's when they, you know, they started, getting to work on it and kind of writing all the vignettes and all that stuff. So
what in the end,
that's awesome, yeah. Man. And
what, really quick, ahead, what in the end do you think it was that stopped any momentum to it? Because I remember seeing the premiere of the character.
Oh, I'm a dumbass. I'll stop you right there. That's what stopped any momentum from it, because I'm a complete and fucking dumbass. That's why. One night, I was still in Louisville and stuff like that. My girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time, Maven Sly, a roommate that lived with us. We all went out to Bar Louisville, Have a Nice Day Cafe, and Blue Martini. It was Sly's birthday, I think it was. long story short, there's a young man there that, he was drunk as shit. He was just, pushing through us and being a real dick and everything else. I looked at my wife. I was like, look, I gotta go. Or look, my, wife, or, we'll say my wife, but my girlfriend, headed, we gotta go. So come back. I just used the restroom. Come back, and she's kind of in tears, and he said some things, probably used the C word, a couple of other things he probably shouldn't have. Now, granted, I should have beat the fuck out of him. I looked at her and told her, I said, look, we got too much to lose. The sky's about to be the limit. I know where I'm going. I used to bounce a lot of bars. Back in the day, stuff like that. You know when someone's coming to hit you with a beer bottle and he's already told his friends to watch him and to come in next. I just been in those situations too many times. I knew what was coming next and how he was coming at us. So I used my kickball head to greet him and try to defuse the situation. And because I've got a really fat head, it might have done more than it probably should have done. It sucked for all involved. It was shitty for him. It was shitty for me. Lesson learned is, stay away from the situations and don't be a dumbass. So from that point on, I never really went to many bars or did anything stupid anymore.
Wow.
I knew it when I had to go talk to Vince, and go in there and explain to him. I just fucked up. I mean, I knew it. He still wanted to give me a chance, but I mean, they wanted to, being a WWE superstar and everything else, they want to make you out to look like you're a complete and utter monster. Yeah. They train me to be a killer, and they train me to be this, and then they trying to sue WWE for millions and everything else. And it was like with all that pressure and everything else going on, I wasn't living up to my expectation either, with what could have been done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, most definitely, man. And so from there, they sent you back to OVW, and you competed under a mask, and then you were released in 2005. From there, you hit the indies, did all that kind of stuff. And then in June of 2006, you were back on WWE programming as a member of the ECW roster, and Kevin Thorne was born. You didn't come alone. You had a tarot card reading valet, Ariel. Out of curiosity, what was the feeling in the locker room when that brand was launched? What did you think about the execution of the storylines, the gimmicks of ECW, and being in, having the expectations from a much loved brand prior, that was there prior
you know, man, I had a blast. I mean, I really did. We were kind of the rogues, everything else. I was back with WWE, and everything else. And quite frankly, I didn't give a fuck where I was at. as long as I was, not wrestling, for some bullshit fucking indie out there with, some guy that thinks he's Vince McMahon. if I'm going to get yelled at, I'm going to get yelled at by Vince, not some fucking backyarder that calls himself a fucking promoter that works at a 7-Eleven. Sorry, that's just, and nothing against anybody who's working at 7-Eleven, sorry. But if you're, if you're the promoter that does that and you think you're a badass, fuck you. It's crazy because, Tommy and Sabu and RVD and those guys, man, they, this was their blood, sweat, and tears, Paul, and stuff. And then here we are, kind of getting pushed into it. And, and we have to make a name for ourselves, too. We're just going to get pushed into it and then pushed right out. So, we can't, we came in there, wanting to do stuff. But, and I know it's, they felt, oh, it's ECW light, it's ECW this, and, it's not the real ECW. But you know what? Yeah, but, let's make the most of it, And, we were, towards the end, we were having some killer stuff, at least when I was there, kind of saying. It definitely was fun. It was just a chance to go out there and prove yourself. That's what made it, so much fun. I mean, granted, we weren't getting paid dick. Holy crap. I think I was making more money on the indies than I was making more money working for ECW after you paid for all the travel and everything else that you had to pay for. But I mean, still, that was a chance to get back on TV and gave me, my chance to be on WrestleMania. So, everything happens for a reason and it was definitely a time I, enjoyed. I love Sabu, I love RVD, I love, Tommy, Sandman, Balls, all those guys. They had such a camaraderie amongst, it was like, honor and thieves kind of in a way, which was so cool to me. And they loved their brand,
Did they ever look at you guys as anything other than people who were trying to do their jobs?
No, man, no. Tommy protected us like we were his own.
Good.
So did RVD, so did Sandman, all those guys. I mean, those guys were always a band of brothers. And then, whoever was being a part of that were treated as such. Anytime I worked RVD, I still had some of the best. I wish they would always have been on TV. They weren't.
Right.
At house shows and stuff like that. I mean, he made me look like $1 million, and stuff. So Sabu, Tommy, exact same. Sandman would bitch that I was potatoing him the whole time, but he still loved me. It doesn't matter. So yeah. So I mean, goddamn kid, fuck you. You're fine. You're killing me. Yeah, sorry. It's just the way I work. and stuff, but it definitely was a time. I mean, they kind of considered us as being the other misfits that just got thrown into it.
it's hysterical to me that here you have hardcore icon Sandman and he's getting potatoed, and it's like, why are you hitting me so hard?
That's like fucking Balls Mahoney. Jesus fucking Christ. That guy can swing a chair harder than anybody else out there. And I love him. God rest his soul. He's
such a sweetheart. He really was. But there was a match that I was basically told to go in. He'd been an idiot, and for some reason, I was the guy working him, and I basically got told if I didn't go in there and fucking lay it in, that not to come back, basically back to the curtain this way anyway. You know, and I'm like, all right, man, it's my job in line too. Fuck this. Okay. So, I went out there and beat the piss out of him, and the whole time, he's like, oh, man, you're killing me. I'm like, you fucking pussy. If I gave you a chair right now, you'd swing for the fences, not even twice about hitting hard. But here I am laying hard forms and stiff elbows and clotheslines into you, and you're whining about it. Come on. Like, you guys are not as tough as you made it out to be,
And now you had mentioned WrestleMania. I think that's something that kind of gets glossed over, that ECW had a match in right smack dab in the middle of WrestleMania 23, which ironically enough, your match was sandwiched between Undertaker and Batista and Bobby Lashley with Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, against Umaga and Armando Alejandro Estrada and Vince McMahon. So, I mean, you guys had a very prominent position on the card. What was that like, being a part of the biggest show of them all?
Oh, man, it was unreal. And honestly, man, you know, Tommy will tell the story. I think he tells it better than anybody because he knows more than any of us. But, I mean, we weren't even going to have it.
Wow.
because they wanted more time and everything else. Him and Dean and RVD and, you know, some others, you know, fought for it. But we had been on, so WWE was in Mexico the week before, mm-hmm. doing a four-day loop down there. And we were tearing the fucking roof off of Mexican arenas with the match of us four versus, the new breed versus the originals. And it got noticed. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big, like, hey, these guys are, I mean, and that's what we were doing. I mean, we were going out, you know, thinking, hey, you know what? We ain't got nothing to lose, so we might as well just throw it all out there and, you know, hey, follow us. And that's kind of the mindset, you know, between the eight of us is let's go out there and tear the effing roof off the place and stuff. And that's, I mean, and that's what we did, but, like, even WrestleMania, I think it was a 6-minute match, 7-minute match with entrances. I mean, it was like slated for 12, then it was 10, then it was 6, and then it was back to this, and then, you know, and then as soon as you get out there, just go the fuck home, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to tell a great story here, guys. Hold on, you know, and stuff, and it came back to, the, okay, you got this much time. Like, every 5 seconds, you're like, yeah, sure, like, you know. So, it worked out, man. I wish I could have enjoyed the very end of it and stuff, but somehow when I got thrown out by Rob Van Dam at the very end, I caught my nut right on the rope. Oh. So I'm literally choking my nut out of on the floor down when they're all doing their stand up and stuff. Yes, that's my one take home from. I'm like, oh, this is great. I think I just lost the ball. You know, what a great story to tell.
I'm going to have to bring that up next time I talk to Rob and be like, hey, remember when you nailed Kevin's nuts on the bottom rope?
It wasn't him even nailing me. It was just he threw me out and I caught it. I was going out between the top and the basket, man. Like, it just got caught, like, in between my leg and the rope, I guess. I don't know. It was just like, you got to be kidding me. I'm sitting there on the floor going, I think I'm going to die right here.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Shelly's trying to pick me up going, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I can't breathe. You know, I was like, hold on. I was like, I got to cough that back down or swallow it because it's up in my throat right now. Oh, Jesus. Rob made ECW fun, and you can tell him I said that next time you talk to him.
Yeah,
like he really I, first couple times still being semi-green, stuff like that. Rob, what do you want to do? Kevin Vampire Dude. He always called me Kevin Vampire Dude. Kevin Vampire Dude. Just relax, man. Just relax. I got this. You know, you wouldn't see Rob for a while. You know, he was doing whatever he was doing. He'd come back.
And right.
He'd be ready to go. You know? Like, bring up the heat. All right. Da. Like, and he knew his – that's the best thing about Rob, man. He knows his stuff better than anybody. And like, he'll let you do his thing, and he's got them beaten out of the crap. Palm of their hand. Actually, Rob's is probably the easiest comeback I've ever bumped and said for, because most of the time you're just laying there waiting for him to squash you.
Right. Like, yeah.
Like, oh, here comes the frog. Blah. Oh, you know,
yeah. Well, that's true, because you do, you know, if you're just taking those kind of bumps, it's a lot easier, because all you have to do is now just get your wind back for a second. Instead of, you know, taking like an onslaught beating.
Just bumping his feet and getting up and down. You just got to lay there and take it.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's not that bad.
What was it like working with Shelly? Because, you know, she was like the perfect match. I think that the chemistry was really good, and she played a vampire really well.
Shelly had her stuff, man. You know, Shelly definitely had her stuff down with everything else. She brought an aspect to it that was unreal. I know she had her beef with whoever in the back or whatever, and that's kind of what got her, set her ways. I could have done it better without her. She brought just as much to it as I did, for sure.
And who did you travel
Most
with?
Definitely.
Who did you travel with during that time?
Ronnie Brown.
Oh, nice.
So Marcus Corvan, yeah, man. Me and him, we liked working out. He liked keeping me in line. It was easy travel with him. I started out with Tess, I love Tess, don't get me wrong, but Tess can be a fucking dick sometimes. And it was just like, you know, an angry giant sometimes. It's like, just chill out, just because you haven't eaten in 2 hours, breathe. Oh, I'm gonna get fat like you jobber. Okay, great, you know, whatever, you know. So God love him, but yeah, he was special. So that drove me and Monty to ride together, and it worked out really, really well.
Nice.
Most definitely, man. And so in January of 2009, after spending some more time in developmental, you reportedly offered a contract extension, which you declined. It was later announced that you were then released from WWE by request. What led you to asking for your release from WWE?
Ah, man, stupidity once again. Thinking the grass could be greener somewhere else, stuff like that. Some backstage stuff I just don't care to talk about. It was a mixture of things. They were dicking me around, kind of sending me to Florida and stuff. And I was like, I'm over being in developmental. I'm not going to go back to developmental again. So I went and got my hip fixed also at that time. Well, as soon as I get my hip fixed, I got called telling me that, we got this great angle for you and Taker again. Are you ready to come back? I'm like, I have a 6-month labrum tear. I just had surgery today. Yeah, magically, I'm going to fucking get back. Sure. They're like, well, how fast do you think you can? Because this is, whatever, and this could lead to this. So I busted my ass to get back in shape. Like literally 6 months, I was back. I went to rehab twice a day, every day, to the point where the guy's like, you know, my doctor was like, "You're almost on the borderline of over pushing," and got it going. He wouldn't release me until I could run a mile at speed of eight. Within so many minutes or whatever, and I ended up doing it. And he's like, "Well, I got you released. That was a promise I made you." And then I get there, and then they send me back down to make sure I am okay down to Florida. Well, Dusty was down there, and Dusty was one of my biggest fans. man, I love him. Dusty and I, Dusty loved my promo stuff, and man, he could bring it out of me better than anybody. He's the one that originally got me back to being the Vampire, got me back into ECW, got me my job, was him being down there and him going to bat for me, going, "This guy's, promoing us his money," and stuff. And, I get back with him and I'm like, "Look, the short-haired Kevin Thorne, whatever, with no nothing, it's bullshit. It sucks. Like, what, he's like, "Well," he goes, "Why don't we do this?" And then, so we get in there, we go into the Florida Championship facility, the one that was in Tampa, and do a promo, talking about, on the wrong tracks and coming for you, Taker, and all this stuff. And he puts these lights to it and all this crazy shit and stuff. If you want to hear the promo, all you got to do is listen to Dave Hansen's promo, because that's what it was. And I lost my fucking shit. And that was where I went into Baltimore, and I was like, "What's going on? Oh no, you're gonna be put with them. No big deal." I'm like, "Yeah, but that was not mine. I wrote those. I did. We think you'll be a better secondary than a talker." And I'm like, "What the fuck?" And it was just, and it was just, and again, it's stupidity and ego. Maybe I should have just, ate it. I mean, at the time we didn't have AEW. At the time, they didn't have TNA, Ring of Honor. They had TNA, but they didn't have these big competitors that they were worried about. Mm-hmm. That you could just, screw it, fire me, and jump to. And I was like, "Well, fuck," it is what it is. Everything happens for a reason. I make one hell of a real estate agent now. Through those times of not putting up with shit like that, and it's I guess what kind of keeps me pretty good at real estate is being like, "Nope, that's not fair." So
what, if someone's looking to do some real estate deals and looking to get like a new house or looking to sell, what can they do to get in contact with you, and how has the real estate market been with all the craziness that's going on, with everyone kind of just wondering what's going to happen financially coming up?
Well, I mean, right now real estate market's strong, and that's the thing, is we're going to have to keep an eye on it, because we don't know. I mean, this is uncharted territory. There are a lot of people, losing jobs and stuff like that. And it sucks for them. There's ways for them too. My wife and I own an insurance business. There's ways too. Like, if you do own a house right now, you have cars, you have some stuff, take a look at your insurance policies also. And this is just food for thought for people out there. You can also, have them rerun, have a couple different companies rerun it. You might be able to save some money. I mean, that's going to be the telltale right now, is saving money.
Yeah.
If you have lost your job and stuff like that. So, I encourage people to do that. As far as housing market and stuff. I think we're going to end up being a buyer's market instead of a seller's market. You know, now people are going to be able to get a little, get that house that they wanted that was kind of, you know, not overpriced, but, there's going to be an opportunity for them to get it now because, you know, the market's just not going sky high, red hot like it was, and things aren't going to be selling way over, you know, asking price and stuff like that. I think it's going to bring it back down to a normal. You know, I don't think it's, you know, that's going to be as, you know, crazy out there, you know, as lucrative for a seller.
Right.
You know, going on, I can sell my house, you know, for this. I can get way more than this because everybody wants our house right now. I think it's going to bring it back down a little bit. You know, sellers are going to need buyers. Buyers are going to need sellers. So it's going to be kind of even flow, you know, instead of vice versa. So, but yeah, as far as contacting me, I have a Facebook page, Kevin Furtick Realty. You can always, Instagram is at the Kevin Furtick. Twitter is at the Kevin Furtick. And then two, real soon, I'm going to have www.thechampishome.com because, yes, I do have a badass wrestling belt. Look at it online that I bring to closings and stuff like that. And throw it over your shoulder. We take pictures, do all kind of crazy stuff. You know, your family wants 8x10s, I'll give them to you. I'm not afraid. Just make it fun. I got in a ring and with a mini a battle royal and everything else and duked it out for people. I can do the same for them, you know, looking for a house I think the equivalent to me of a house is this is kind of like your Madison Square Garden being in this house. If you want to run around the house like Ultimate Warrior in your underwear and shake your banisters, you know what? It is your house. Feel free. If you feel like jump top down onto the couch, Macho Man style, feel free. It is your house. That's kind of why, you know, I've kind of, you know, the Champ's Home slogan is, man, you know, once you're champion, man, you can't do any wrong in your own house. So, you know, get into it and make it your own and have a blast.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, it's been a lot of fun talking with you. And, you know, I'm so glad to see that you're doing well with the real estate and, you know, always have been a fan of your work in the ring and your promos. And it's just cool to see that you've gone on to do something that you're just as passionate and has still found a way to tie it into, you know, having wrestling as part of it. And it's amazing,
man. Wrestling is the greatest business in the world, man. I wouldn't change it for the world. The people I've met, places I've been to, and all that stuff. I mean, there's no reason why you can't, tie the real world into the quote unquote fake pro wrestling world. life is the work anyway. Trust me.
Yeah.
So we might as well treat it as such and have a damn good time doing it.
Excellent, man.
Definitely.
Well, we appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll catch up with you in the future and kind of talk a little bit more and hear some more stories because, it's fascinating, man.
Look forward to it.
Awesome, brother. All right, everyone. Bad Boys of Podcasting.